Today, I'm really excited for two main reasons. Emma Martin, former Data Protection Commissioner of the Channel Island and now Chief Commissioner for the DMC, has joined today. Hello, Emma, and welcome.
Thank you.
The second reason is that we're going to be talking about AI. This is a topic that it's on everybody's mind. There is a lot of noise about it. I came across a post on social media the other day encouraging the C-suite to elevate their game with AI integration. So apparently, CIOs are leading innovation and operational streamlining through AI. CHRO are leveraging AI. CFOs are optimizing financial strategy. CPO are revolutionizing product development. And COO are enhancing efficiency and agility. It would seem that there is also a rise of AI advisors, which means that specialist AI advisors may soon join the C-suite. They all talk about the benefits of AI, how CEO can access real-time insights on every aspect of the organization through dynamic dashboard, allowing them to anticipate trends and make data-driven decision with precision. I'm not sure about that, given the AI is still very much in its infancy. How embracing AI empowers leaders to plan better and anticipate challenges. This is all great, and I have nothing against adopting informative decision-making, but there seem to be lack of understanding that behind this data, there are people, real live human being that could come to harm. And this reckless approach to AI actually makes me shiver, especially when I think of children. I know, Emma, that you're also very passionate about data protection and educating people. And I'm so glad that you have decided to join me in my mission of generating awareness on this matter. So, what are your thoughts on AI?
Well, firstly, thank you so much for the invitation, Christine. It's lovely to join you here today. It's so interesting to listen to your introduction because I think it sort of sums up where we are, that there's an awful lot of talk about AI fixing the world's problems. And they're not wrong. Those conversations should be being had because AI has incredible potential to allow us to do the things that we want to do and to do them better and faster and cheaper and more efficiently. But I think, we spoke about this at a recent conference that you were at as well, that the bubble that we exist in the data protection and privacy world, we're very good at talking about the harms and the risks, but the world isn't that good. And I think that we need to be very careful that we don't just focus entirely on thinking AI is going to solve all our problems, because it won't. There are huge benefits, and I resist it when people think that data protection people are just anti-innovation, anti-technology, anti-AI. We're not. We simply want to see it done safely. And it's a point that you made in the introduction, is that I think there is a danger in technology and data that we are disconnected from the consequences of the processing, because it's tech. We're very the human consequences seem a little bit distant sometimes. So, as you know, I'm a huge book fiend. And one fantastic book, which I think is the title of your podcast today, about why AI undermines democracy and what to do about it. It sounds very sort of a real existential threat. And I think to some degree it is. I sort of resist the sort of Terminator style robot, humanoid robots killing us all and taking control of the world. I think it's much more subtle than that. But this particular book, which came to mind when you and I spoke about this sort of chat, it's such a neat little book. It's by a chap called Mark Kuckelberg, and he's a professor of philosophy of media and technology at the University of Vienna. I so want to go there, just to say. I mean,
I'm coming with
what,
you.
yeah, exactly. I want to be an eternal student. It's never been a better time to learn so much going on. But what he talks about in the book, which is much more eloquently than I could ever do, and that's why it's so nice to refer to the experts who write about these things, he talks about how AI is being used as a political tool. And I think that's something that really resonates with us as professionals, but also the community, because we're in a year this year of hugely important elections. And AI, it is a powerful tool. You know, the way it can be used to manipulate individuals and groups of people. You know, we hear almost every day now stories about polarization, discrimination, surveillance, oppression, the fake images, the fake photos that you see, especially around politics, not exclusively, of course, but if we're talking about democracy, the photographic, the skills that AI brings to that is extraordinary. Because you look at them and you think they look real. And it's easy to say, well, it's just a photograph, right? But it can set the most extraordinary chain of events into play, especially look at what's happening in the US recently. So I think that we just need to be better at talking about the human consequences, the sort of speed and the scale. It's not that these things didn't happen in the past, but it is simply that they're so, done so much faster and so much easier. So the impact, the ripple effect, becomes a tsunami on us as a society and as individuals. And democracy is fragile. Look around the world, and we need to remind ourselves of that fragility. And do all that we can to make sure that we understand what's at stake here.
Absolutely, Nate. I'm glad you mentioned the book, because it's a small book, but it's so powerful in my mind. I've only read 4 chapters so far, so I've not read it all, and I am looking forward to the rest. But already, what I've read, it really scares me in terms of one of the things that really sort of hit me is that, especially in politics, so you have those individuals that, for example, are not necessarily loyal to a particular party. So one time they will vote one way, another time they will vote another way. And those are the kind of people that the politicians will be targeting to then influence them. And that targeting will be quite personalized to them so that they can swing them towards voting for that particular party. And that it's manipulation in its purest sense, because it's behind the scene, it's hidden, it's not transparent. And to me, that is quite worrying. So it talks about that. It talks also about that equality is compromised by AI. I mean, AI in itself, like money, is not evil. It's how it's being used. So it's the same approach. And so it can be used for good, but it can also be used for evil, so to speak. Even Chat GPT, that you would think it's quite innocent, but actually, again, it's learning through data that it's out there in social media. So it's using, you know, my post, your post, Emma, to learn. And what we are sharing, it could be personal data, but the AI itself doesn't recognize necessarily that. And therefore, our data is then used without our consent for things that probably we don't even know about. It's all hidden. It's all underneath, behind big curtains. And so there is then transparency also. It's in jeopardy. I think there is a lot to think about, and how AI, it's in the hands of the big tech and big data, and they could also therefore swing things a certain way. And then we're moving farther and farther away from democracy and much more into an authoritarian political environment, and how invasive it is. I mean, if I just think of what's happening with my husband's work, so they now want to put in his van, so he goes out in various quarries to test material, and they want to put in his van a device that will measure, there is already a camera, by the way, in the van, and now they want to put a system in there that measures how fast he's going, how, if he's braking, you know, instant, you know, fast, how he takes the corners. So basically, they're going to be scoring him against a score of 100. So that will also be used then in his performance reviews. So it's going way and above, beyond what is required. I appreciate that obviously safety It's important, but it can be done in other ways. It doesn't have to be that invasive. It feels very privacy invasive, considering that it also has private use or personal use for the van. And sometimes I'm in the van as well, so I shouldn't be tracked or monitored anyway. So yeah, it's just going beyond what is reasonable in my mind.
And I think that that points to the fact that we're often oblivious to the extraordinary amount of data that we leave behind in our wake every single day. And it's often only when something happens to that data that we take stock and pause and think, gosh, yes, that's an awful lot. And it tells an awful lot about me. If I'm tracked, it says that I went to the doctor or I went to a certain clinic for an appointment, or, you know, it tells you my life, really, my location. And this is why when that data is used in a way that is opaque for citizens, it's not easy to engage with the potential harms. So we see it as very sort of ephemeral, something, you know, we even use ephemeral language, you know, data is in the cloud. What does that mean? You know, it's data is really, really tangible, and we need to start thinking it in that way, because then we better understand the potential harms. You know, and just looping back to what you say about authoritarian states and democracies and so forth, I found some stats recently which really, I was really shocked at. I had no idea that 70% of the world population now lives in an autocracy, compares to 49% in 2011. That's from the Democracy Report 2022. So we are going backwards. And so it sort of begs a question, at what point do we just stop for a moment? Because the speed of technology doesn't give us room to think sometimes. We just feel that we're on this trajectory and that the trajectory is predetermined, so we just have to ride it. Well, I just beg to differ. I just think that we need, in order to just not accept that or not be willing acceptors of that, we need just to stop and say, right, what is this for? Who's in control? You know, you talked before about the fact that technology is doing its own, it does its own thing because we tell it to. It's right, it's not sentient, it's not a thinking being, it's doing something that it's been told to do. So the question we must ask ourselves is, who's telling it and what are they telling it to do? And I don't point the fingers to technologists and say you're trying to, you know, be the evil dictators of the world. I think some of these consequences are entirely unintended, but that doesn't really excuse it. There's still consequences and there's still harms on us. So I think, you know, in the past, not too long ago, we used to be exercised about the way the technology was perhaps trying to sell us more stuff, right? But this now gets to the heart of democracies and democratic values, because social media and technology, it used to sort of reflect society, but now it's shaping it, now it's manipulating it. And we're almost like frogs being boiled in a pot. We're just sort of slowly, slowly losing consciousness. Well, maybe it's time to jump out of that pot and say, well, I'm not entirely sure I like the trajectory, because the trajectory is what we decide it to be, right? It's not something that's just happening. So I think we need to take a little bit more control. That means having more honest conversations, expanding these conversations beyond technologists, beyond data protection and privacy people, to the whole, people talk about this a lot, you know, the public conversation, and it's really difficult to get that traction. Of course it is, but that's what we need. We need the world to engage with this in the way that they have done all the environment. You know, not that long ago, it was a very specialist group of people talking about climate change. Now it's everybody. So what happened? That wasn't a law that changed. It was people's consciousness, people's engagement with the issue. We need the same for data.
Yes, absolutely. And I think what we've reached a point in this, in today, is that it's where we are so used to change because it's happening all the time that we stop questioning it and we just accept it. I think you've hit the nail on the head, is that we need to ask questions. We need to stop and ask questions and inquire and be inquisitive and stop being so accepting of change. Not necessarily because it's bad, but because we need to understand it. It needs to be understood. It needs to be, and all of the ramification of it needs to be transparent in order for that change to take place. So Emma, thank you ever so much for joining me today, and I hope to see you soon again.
Thank you, Christine. It's been a pleasure.